No, I'm excited. I listen to your podcast every week, so
yeah,
being on, it's like I'm a part of the magic.
And you'll hear yourself this week, which is
I don't want to be thinking about that. I know it is always weird when you play the tape back and it's your own voice.
But, yeah, and it will be for you. My first podcast, I was like, "Holy shit, that's me!" I sound like that. But you get used to it after a while. Obviously, I hear my voice all the time now, and it doesn't sound as much like a stranger. But you never really get comfortable with it.
So, okay, well, I don't know if that was an intro for the show.
maybe it was. Why not? So I have Jonathan Lobinger. Is that how you say your name?
Yes. Jonathan Lobinger. Jonathan James is just my social media handle. The real deal, Jonathan Lobinger.
The real deal in the flesh, kind of, sort of, in the flesh through this digital, these pipes.
In the digital flesh, yeah, it's like Videodrome.
Yeah, exactly. In the videotape, in the stomach flesh. Jonathan James. So people that have been on a lot of our Facebook groups, you probably have seen the name. I think you've been mentioned on Rcast a couple times. What was that? I think it was Travis said something about like you putting your fist up on the subway.
Well, he said he made the hypothetical that when I heard the podcast, I would be on the Green Line, which is a Boston reference. It's our public transport. Mm-hmm. And I was actually on the Green Line when I was listening to it. So I took a picture of myself doing a fist bump. I was excited to get the call out on the episode. So
yeah, we have a lot of Boston going on. So I got to get up there. Maybe have a Boston cast someday.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to have you here.
Yeah, it's not going to be this year, but I think next year is very, very feasible. So, Jonathan, what do you go by? Jonathan, John, James, Lob?
So yeah, you can just. I go by Kurosawa. No, you can just call me John. That's fine.
John, okay. So, John, we always start the show with what we've been doing. So, what have you been doing?
So obviously watching a lot of movies, taking a break from – I work in insurance and I'm taking a break from some of my my professional certification studying and just focus on catching as many movies as I can. The exciting thing I have coming up is I'm going to be going to Bergman Week. I'm going to actually be going to Sweden, to the island. I'm going to mispronounce it, Faroe, whatever, the island.
I think that's pretty close. Wow. You're actually going to Faroe.
So that's the real draw. I mean, obviously going to Bergman Week is cool and seeing all of those movies, but they're actually doing it on Faroe, which is not the easiest mm-hmm. island to get to.
No,
you have to take a plane and then a ferry and then a car and then another ferry. But it's going to be so. There's going to be a little tour that's going to show us all of the places where he filmed Persona and Shame and so on and so forth. So I'm really excited for that.
Wow, I'm just trying to look up Faroe Island on Google Maps, and I guess Faroe Airport, is that it? No,
so
that's somewhere else.
They don't. Yeah, they don't have an airport. It's not
Portugal.
Faroe. Yeah, there's the Faroe Islands, which is spelled with an E, I think, mm-hmm. and then there's Faroe, which is on top of Gotland in the middle of the Baltic Ocean. It is population 550. It's
nice.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty far out there and pretty exciting to check it out.
That will be a thrill, actually. I can't wait to hear it. You'll have to come back on just to talk about – just to summarize the week.
Absolutely.
So do they – and I've heard of Bergman Week too. I had never really conceived about going there or even considered it, although, man, maybe I should. So is it just a week of catching up on Bergman, or is it Bergman-like films, or what are you in for?
So three things. One, Bergman films and Bergman, Bergmanalia. So it's also going to be that tour that I discussed.
Bergmanalia.
It's also going
that's
definitely a made up word. But there's also going to be that the play that that Seventh Seal came from. I think it's called Wooden Angel or whatever the name of the play is. Mm-hmm. They're actually performing the play.
Wow.
With that they base Seven Seal on. Sorry, you go.
No, I'm sorry. I interject sometimes, so be comfortable. And you're welcome to do the same. But is that going to be in Swedish, the play? I think of Bergman as subtitles. I'm like, well, yeah. There's going to be nothing at the bottom of the screen there.
I'm assuming it's in English, and that would have been why I would have bought it. But to tell you the truth, I'm not exactly sure.
It'll still be awesome. So anyway, I'm sorry. Go, keep going.
No, and the only other thing is there's going to be some other directors there, and they'll be doing interviews. So what's it? Joachim Trest. So he's also going to be there, and they'll be showing I think a couple of his films, but he'll do a discussion. So there'll be a couple of other directors as well. It's just going to be a total film nerd celebration for a week, and I'm really looking forward to it.
That'll be amazing. So yeah, I can't wait to hear about that. I envy you big time for doing that. Anything more on that? There's probably gonna be a lot more on that. I'll have to find I'm sure there's a website for Bergman Week.
There is.
Find that and put that in the notes for people that want to check that out, or maybe people that want to go, like me. I might just go. When is it?
It's a week from now, so it would be impressive if you could put that together. I'll see you there.
I am taking a long weekend next week, so maybe. No, it won't be happening. So I guess you're leaving towards the end of the week. It's a long flight too.
So I'm leaving on June 25th. It's going to be cool too, because it's 22 hours of sunlight. All right, 20 hours, 22 hours of sunlight. It's
right.
It's the white nights. So
sweet.
It's gonna be pretty cool.
That kind of works. Well, that might not work. It reminds me of insomnia, actually. So you might be dealing with that. Maybe they'll play insomnia for you so you can see what you're dealing with. Actually, that might not go well. All right. Well, what I've been doing, and I was tempted to get another beer for this because I had a beer last week, but I think I'll wait. I have a diet soda instead. Maybe beer coming later. So, okay. Well, I've been dealing with this TV ordeal for a week, and last week I talked about it, and as I listened back, I forgot a pretty important detail. Is the reason that my TV was destroyed is because lightning struck really, really right on my doorstep. We live in this little cul-de-sac area, and so I don't know where. I haven't actually seen evidence of the strike. however, I found out just by talking to neighbors this week that it basically wiped out the entire. It wiped out a lot of the electronics in our neighborhood. So some TVs, kitchen appliances, really the same stuff that we're dealing with. I know one neighbor said they saw this orange glow around the time of the strike. But so that was pretty intense. And actually, this poor guy, two doors down from me, he just moved in. And he had just plugged in everything. And he probably didn't have time to get any protectors up. So he basically, like, everything was annihilated in his house, and he's like got to deal with homeowners and all that. So, and just moving in, that sucks for him. And so I shouldn't complain about a 70-inch TV. So
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was an ordeal. I guess it can happen, but I've never experienced it to this extent. So
I always thought that surge protection stuff was overdone, but hearing your experience, it does not sound fun.
Yeah, and we were protected for the most part. We unplugged a lot of them, but even some that we didn't get to were protected and did okay. The TV, actually, it was the coax. We didn't unplug that. We didn't think about the coaxial cable, so that's actually what zapped that. And so, actually, we're probably not even going to put cable on the new one. But as I mentioned, Amazon is awesome, by the way. They're not paying me, but just based on this experience, I completely advocate shopping with them. And they took the TV back this past Monday. Excuse me. And we got they refunded the bill, and then actually we packed it up very very carefully. After 3 days after that, it took them to ship it back. We got another $300. I guess we packed it well enough that we didn't have to pay restocking, which was nice. But we all of a sudden had this blank canvas or this white wall in our room where there's usually, you know, noise. And, of course, obviously I'm into media, so there's usually something playing, if it's the news or sports or a Criterion, something. And my wife, you know, she likes to watch her shows and kind of has those on the background. So, like I said last week, don't cry for us, but It really sucked. It was like just quiet in this household. And so we were thinking, okay, well, probably the next sale is July. Maybe we can hold out for Amazon Prime Day. Maybe not. So anyway, started to shop a little bit, kind of entertain the idea of maybe pulling the trigger on a couple, maybe paying a little more. And then one day I just said, you know what, we got to do something. So I asked my wife and I said, do you empower me to make a decision? And I was talking to her at work. I said, can I buy a TV after work? do I have the authority to do that if I find a good deal? And she said, yes. She was like, buy a fucking TV. I need a TV. So I did. Plan A didn't work. I tried to go to Costco. It wasn't really the best solution. Went to Best Buy too. That didn't really work out either. So actually I came back home and ended up buying a TV on Amazon again.
Yep.
So we got one that was about 5 inches smaller. It was 65 versus 70. But you know, the 70 was actually, I don't ever want to say TV's too big, but it was plenty. It was more than we needed. And so this one's a little bit of an upgrade as far as the colors and all that. I don't know if we'll notice, maybe when we're watching a Malick film. Not that I'll ever get my wife to watch a Malick film. But so anyway, yeah, so we have it on our way. I tried to slip in an Oppo Blu-ray player, which I might still do at some point, but not this time. And it'll arrive on Thursday, which is also announcement day. So I'll have a very busy Thursday. And then we have to mount it. But yeah, so TV saga is over. We get a new one. It's basically like we restarted this. We have a new bill again. There you go. I have a TV.
I think we also have a new hashtag. Hashtag empower Aaron.
Empower me. No, my wife will not be happy with it. This is a one-time thing.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, considering the fact that Amazon is taking over the world, it's good that at least they're going to be nice about it. So
they're going to be nice about it, right? So yeah. So at least for now, you know, they're warming us up, and then in 5 years, when they're sending drones to our house to that may or may not decapitate us, they'll actually, Amazon, I think. And I know what a good customer I am. Everybody here, pretty much all the Criterions I buy come from Amazon.
I'm not buying a Criterion on one of the Barnes and Noble sales, or what was it? It was Target, right? That had that great sale.
Yeah, yeah.
If it isn't one of those, it's Amazon. Buying it at full price, even if it means I get to go to the store and actually look at it and make sure it doesn't have those awful dinged corners. It's got to be Amazon. So
yeah. And I found that the price break is – they generally end up being like $22, maybe $25. So you basically pay $2 to $5 per disc just to not wait until July and October. So I'm usually cool with it, especially since I have the show and I'm looking at them all the time. So anyway, John, more movies should go Criterion. Thank you.
Just like more girls should go my girlfriend.
That was a great response. So people probably have no idea what we're talking about. But
do we think that that guy is a legitimate person, or do we think it was a bot?
That's a good question. So a little background for people that aren't in the group. If you're not in the group, you should be in the group, because I think the group is going very, very well. And you're a big part of that, John. Thank you for your enthusiasm in there. But so anyway, some people have been posting their collections or maybe little tidbits about movies coming out and news stories, whatever. And then a lot of stuff is being posted about the show that I'll post, like a poll we're going to talk about soon. So this one guy just posts, more movies should go Criterion, thank you. That's it. No punctuation. More movie should go Criterion, thank you. No capitalization even. He's kind of had an older profile picture, so I don't know if maybe Facebook is his first language. So that quickly became a thing. We have some silly members, present company included. And so we had some fun with it, actually had some fun behind the scenes. Somebody said that it was a fake account. Who was it that said that? I think it was actually, was it Jason?
I can't remember.
Joshua said, he said, click the guy's profile. I don't think he's real, but I clicked his profile. It looked pretty damn real. So his name is Robert Pluska. Please don't troll him. He's probably a super sweet guy, but I agree. More Criterion more movies should go Criterion. Thank you. That's what the show's about, actually, is more movies should go Criterion. Thank you.
I mean, if you think about it, though, it is a much more succinct way of saying what a lot of people that we make fun of say in many more words. So at least he had economy of language.
He came right out with it. He's like, more movie Criterion, and he was very polite. You know, the thank you. I was moved by the thank you. I mean, we need decency these days.
Absolutely.
No, he had a lot of poker stuff in his profile and some pictures. I think he was a real guy. But yeah, I'm looking at it now. 100 friends, 101 friends. Maybe I should make it 102. yeah, it does seem a little older. So maybe I don't want to make fun of him. But he hasn't responded to any of those comments where people were ragging on him. And I think it was pretty good natured. But yeah, that was our first viewer or listener feedback, and probably my favorite ever. So yeah, more movie.
I'm all for it. Let's start with Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Let's start with that. Yeah. You might notice a grayed out name in that thread. Somebody got banned in this week. So anyway, not to get into the minutiae of Facebook group administration, but yeah. And you know, if you have any feedback, whether it is this succinct, feel free to drop it on our page. if you want less movie should go Criterion and no thank you, do so. So, okay. Anyway, next little topic is we lost somebody. We tend to bring up the people that we've lost that have connections to Criterion because, you know, it's a bummer and we lose some great people. I think on Close Up I mentioned Bowie, so obviously he's not really primarily a film actor, but he does have a connection. But just yesterday, and we're recording this on the Sunday, but we lost Adam West. And do you like Batman, John?
So I do like Batman, and I am one of the people that grew up with the reruns of the, what was it, the 60s or the 70s Batman that he was on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up with that TV show.
Yeah, I actually own the box set. I bought it from, actually it was Scott and I told me about this killer deal from Italian Amazon. It was region-free, and I think I bought it for like $20.
But you region free guys, you're just better than everybody else. It's amazing the superpowers you get when you're region free.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about region free lately. Yeah, we do get some deals, especially now with the UK and the Brexit and the post elections. I feel for the country. I really do.
But if it's a bonus for your physical media collection, then you know, kind of.
Yeah,
it evens out.
It's my shelf space, the country's well-being. It's tough to reconcile there. So anyway, not to just tell Aaron stories, but so this one has a little bit of it hits a little close to home for me. And I don't want to make light of Adam West. He was a good actor. I think he's really the Batman, legendary, and he had a great sense of humor too. I know he was on Family Guy, and I think some Adult Swim stuff. So yeah, a good-natured guy, seems like a funny guy. But my name is Aaron West, and so I could be talking to somebody, whether I'm making like a customer service call or I'm at work. And for 4 decades, people have said, you know, we'll have a conversation, and then they'll say, "Thanks, Adam," or they'll call me up and say, "Hey, Adam." So I've been called Ms. Adam West probably hundreds, maybe thousands of times. have you ever thought of me as Adam West, John?
It's funny. When you said Adam West, I said, "Oh, I'll make sure he doesn't say Aaron West."
Yeah. So it's actually kind of been an inside joke in my family and my wife. So for a while, actually, it kind of subsided because the Batman phase wasn't as in the public consciousness. But then he started reaching out to younger audiences, and it came back again. Younger people were like, "Oh, you know," they try to relate to me, like, "Yeah, I'm Aaron West," and they'll call me Adam. And sometimes I have to correct them because they're going to write that on a spreadsheet, and I don't want them writing the wrong name. And then they'll be like, "Oh man, but he's such a cool guy. Are you a Batman?" It's as if I like live my life being as Adam West. So I made jokes out of it. And sometimes I would tell people that he was like a drunk uncle and he was a complete asshole. So yeah, I just make up stories. Anyway, this is terrible for me to say now, but
No, and I think I have a ton of admiration for people that have wild success at a certain point in their career. You know, certain celebrities that have wild success in a certain point of their career, but then they age with such grace, where they can have a sense of humor about where they are in pop culture and take it off from there. Where you realize, like, wow, this guy, even though he was the Batman in the '60s, still clearly a talented, funny guy who has who doesn't take himself too seriously, and. You know, I definitely. While I grew up with him on the reruns of Batman, also obviously he was one of the funniest people on Family Guy. So
yeah, what a voice too. I mean, really, my only regret is I did not get Adam Letts on the podcast, and he probably would have laughed about me being called his name for 40 years.
And he probably would have come on your podcast as well.
You know, I should have asked. Maybe he would have. I don't know if he's a Criterion fan. I know he probably isn't known for doing art film so much. It's more just comedy and some geek culture kind of stuff.
We watch in the the Criterion Closet videos, and it seems like there are a surprising number of Criterion fans. People that come out of the woodwork and say, "Yeah, I've seen this Criterion." Everybody keeps saying they need to get this Criterion. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't make any assumptions. But yes.
Could be rest surprised.
In peace, rest in peace, Adam West.
You almost said Aaron West.
You can just tell because you can see the video.
No, I'm gonna play it back, and if you didn't, I'm editing it. But I heard those first two A's. So he's a legend. But the weird thing is, and I hate to think about it like this because I wonder if I'm gonna be called Adam West less because it does get annoying. Let's be honest. If you were called Well, I can't really think of a name.
If I was called David Bowie.
Or John Leibowitz because of John Stewart. I don't know. Yeah, that's probably too obscure since that's a pseudonym. But if you were called something.
I did not realize his name was Leibowitz.
I could be wrong. It's.
Oh, look, I'm learning something new every day.
That we're just here to educate you. And by you, I mean John, not the audience. Probably everybody else knows this. So anyway, rest in peace, Adam West, and we'll see if I still get called your name.
Was he in any Criterions?
No.
Okay.
At least I don't believe so. I didn't check, but I can check right now. Adam West, Criterion. Actually, that's one thing I might find results for myself. Oh, Robinson Crusoe on Mars. So what do you know?
So Robinson Crusoe on Mars, that's live action or is that animation?
Live action, yeah, he was in that. Cool. That's right, and I've seen it. I don't think he was a main character. I don't remember his character at all, but I remember seeing him and thinking, "Oh, cool, Adam West." I'm actually a fan. He played. I think he was a lower build character. No, he was top three. So there you go, Criterion Connection. He has one. You're right. I shouldn't make assumptions. So segueing from there. Tough to segue from Adam West, but rest in peace. 88 years old. That's a good life.
He lived it. Yeah, lived a full life.
So this year, this week, actually, there's been a lot of lists coming up. The New York Times pretty much kicked it all off with their big top 25 list with A.O. Scott, and I never say her name right.
Is it Manola Dargis? That's what I always say.
I think that's right. It's really a beautiful link. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Because when I open stuff on my computer, sometimes things get weird. So I'm not going to scroll through it on this list. But yeah, it's a beautiful page. I thought it was a pretty good list. The one thing about these lists is it's so easy to hate because they're subjective. We all have our own. And I thought this was pretty good. But then there were celebrity lists. The biggest one that stood out for me was Antoine Fuqua. Did you look at these at all?
I did look at them, but I didn't remember which one was on which ones were on his list.
It's about what you'd expect, and I don't mean that as any hate towards Antoine Fuqua, but probably not any Criterions on the list. So A.O., I guess A.O., do we call him that? I'm sure he has a name.
No, I think, yeah, A.O. Scott, the man.
Yeah, no, his list was okay. It was so Fences, number one, Slumdog Millionaire, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Zero Dark Thirty, And then he had Gladiator on that. There, he had Avatar on there.
So this is Antoine Fuqua's list,
right? Right. And then there was Sofia Coppola, who had some great films on her list, but then she also had was it Daddy's Home?
So, I'm surprised she didn't put down The Cobbler.
Yeah, you know, it was probably one of the two, but she's a big Will Ferrell fan, apparently. And then Paul Feig from the guy that did Bridesmaids, he had some comedies, I think Napoleon Dynamite, Deadpool, that sort of thing. Yeah. And then Denis Villeneuve had some good films. And then Brett Ratner actually had, well, they were okay. He had Birth on there. I think that gets some cred. And who else was there? Is that it? Oh, Alex Gibney, the documentarian. And, of course, he had some good documentaries, Grizzly Man, Heart of a Dog. So I went ahead and put together my 100 list. And I know you did, too, and you sent it to me right before the show, and I haven't really consumed it yet, but I'll put it in the notes. So do you want to talk about – I mean, is this – all right, we see lists all the time. Is this a cool thing, or is this just a passing fad?
So I've been talking about this with a few of my friends. In fact, I just came from I live in Charlestown, Massachusetts. So I live in we're having Bunker Hill Day Parade today. Cool. And just at a barbecue, and I was talking to people about this. And the point that I made was our little corner of film nerddom doesn't really discuss lists that often, other than the Criterion Collection itself, just because there are so many of them and they typically are so poorly done. The reason why I think this one is relevant, why this one caught on so much, is because of the fact that it's New York Times.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that it's A.O. Scott, Manuela Dargis, who are probably two of, you know, probably the top 10 film critics right now. So mm-hmm. when they put out a list, it has a little bit more weight than just if, you know, some other website puts out a listicle that's just, you know, generated from somebody who might be good, might not be.
Yeah,
this is pretty serious. Yeah.
Yeah, Taste of Cinema has like a list a day or maybe multiple.
You know what? And I read every single one of them, so I really shouldn't pretend to be all high and mighty. So.
And I'm not either. I think lists are fun. I make a whole bunch of them on Letterboxd. I made, you know, favorite criterions, although I have to update that. It's been a while. And I was doing yearly lists. So I think they're awesome. And so this just prompted my creative juices to put something together. And I felt okay about mine. I noticed that I'm generally an international viewer. I like a lot of foreign films. So there were surprisingly more American films than I expected, especially near the top.
Yeah.
I didn't count, but there are, of course, a lot of Criterion films. And my number one was Mulholland Drive. So let's see. How long did you spend on this?
So I went to the local vegetarian fast food joint, and I sat. Which interestingly enough, many of the people that work there are film students over at Emerson College. So I sat down with a big piece of paper and just went through lists and searched the internet and just tried to write down all the movies I'd seen that I really really liked from the last 17 years.
Nice.
So it actually probably took me a few hours. But this is the first list that I've created, and it's actually helpful because a lot of people ask me, because now that I'm, you know, I'm getting deeper into film culture, a lot of my friends have been asking me, well, what are your favorite films? And it's, when you're on the spot, it's kind of hard to come up with them. So I put together a list, and I knew which ones were going to be in my top five or top 10, In the Mood for Love. I think pretty much everybody puts on their top in their top list, just because, you know, In the Mood for Love, you have to include the year 2000 in your list of movies, for no other reason than to include In the Mood for Love. So,
yeah, and I'm actually just looking here. I need to see The Fountain. I've never seen The Fountain. That's your number one.
So it's
Aronofsky.
Yeah, it's one of Darren Aronofsky's it's probably his least watched movie. I think more people see Pi than see The Fountain. But it's controversial. Some people love it, some people hate it. I think it is I watch it every single year. It's as close as a movie can come to a spiritual experience for me, which sounds pretentious and over the top, but it's actually true for me.
That's because it is, John. nice going. No. You know, I've had a couple of false starts. The one thing is, it's not one that's really come out on any special. Yeah. Unlike his other work, like The Wrestler, Requiem, which both of which made my list. So I think I've like tried it on HBO a couple of times and been like 5 minutes, and it, not that nothing wrong with a movie, but just, all right, not my frame of mind at the moment. So yeah, I think I'm going to have to rethink that and give it another shot. You have a lot of good movies. I need to see your name. That's a pretty recent one. And The Lure, yeah, a number of these I haven't seen yet. Good list.
Yeah, my list is also impacted, I think, like anybody's list, on how I was feeling at the moment of watching the movie. So movies that I saw in the movie theater, mm-hmm. and was, you know, I tend to, if I'm blown away in the movie theater, it's an extra, it's a extra enjoyable experience. So movies that I watched in the movie theater that really blew me away tend to do well. Mm-hmm. On my list. So.
Same here. Pulse was number five. My wife makes fun of me because number six, she makes fun of me because we both saw that together in the movie theater. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's Kiyoshi Kurosawa. And we saw it at a film festival like 10, 15 years ago. And she hated it. It's like, she calls it one of the worst experiences of her life, but I couldn't have had further opposite experience as she did. And it's actually coming out on Arrow in a couple months, so I'm going to subject her to it again, whether she likes it or not. No, actually, I'm going to watch that myself.
So the movie you and I have that's probably the closest to the top for both of ours is Punch Drunk Love, I think.
Yeah. And actually that took a while. I don't know if you heard our episode about that, but
of course,
if I had not revisited on Criterion, it might've made the list, but probably in like the '80s, nineties. Mine was 100. I think yours was 50, but yeah, really good list.
Yes. Yes. And Yee, which were you in that close? Were you in the Criterion close up of that?
Was I in the Criterion close up of that? I don't know if we've done a podcast about that, but
it's A Brighter Summer Day. Sorry, Gang in the collection. You're right. Yeah. Sorry about that.
We did that with Scott and I and Mark, and so we talked about Yee, and I did a blog post about Yee for a friend, and I think I put it on Criterion Close Up, but I can't remember. If it shows up in the show notes, that's what I did, but I think I remember being pretty proud of that one. About that post. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, I love Yee, and I've seen it probably 3 or 4 times. And when it's that long, and let's face it, it is kind of a slower paced film. And I think pretty much that's Edward Yang's thing. But to be able to go back to it and not be bored on second, third, fourth viewings is says something. So, all right, well. Yeah, we'll put our lists in the Facebook group. I'll post John's, and I think I already posted my own. But feel free to tear us apart. It's fine.
Feel free to tear Aaron apart. Please be gentle to me. I'm very sensitive.
Oh, no, you're not. I kind of don't believe that. All right. And A.O. Scott and Manolo Darnas, they had There Will Be Blood at number one, which I think is kind of – and, of course, there's a consensus among each other, which is – so it's, and I think in a spirited way, Million Dollar Baby, I wouldn't agree with, but I think it was fine. A touch of Sin, which I haven't seen.
I haven't seen it either.
And then fifth is The Death of Mr. Lazarescu, which I highly recommend. And actually, I'll be referencing that in a little bit. So, but I'm not going to just sit back and read somebody from the New York Times' list. You can read that yourself and tell us if it sucks. It doesn't. I think it's pretty good list. So let's move on. This week will be the September announcements. And it's interesting because I think most of the New Year's drawing clues have been announced now. And there are some hints that have come out through social media and, of course, the newsletter. But I think it's kind of wide open. So we put together a poll of just what people... It was kind of a wish list / prediction poll, and I think you added one of the most popular entries, and that was why don't you talk about that, John?
So is that the Wong Kar Wai box set, Gimme, 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 which is not the official name of the box set? That's not what I was suggesting.
You know, I think it should be. I think it should be Wong Kar Wai, Gimme, 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 Please Now. Was that it? Something like that?
So I didn't even know there are some people that are saying that Criterion might have the rights to all of the Wong Kar-wai films. They've obviously put out Chungking Express, although that's out of print right now. Mm-hmm. And In the Mood for Love, as I already discussed, is one of the great films of – I mean, it's just one of the great films. I love that movie.
Sure.
And so, but Wong Kar-wai has a large number of other films that are really hard to get in the United States, or really hard to get in any high quality format. So, if they do have the rights to that, yeah, give us as much Wong Kar-wai as you can possibly give us, because we will buy it all.
Is it Wong Kar-wai or Wong Kar-wai? I might have.
It's probably the opposite of however I pronounced it. From Boston. I don't pronounce anything correctly.
I just was thinking I might have been pronouncing that wrong all these years, which I might have. So I'm sure somebody will correct me. There have been rumors, and even recently, Happy Together showed up on the Criterion Channel with Criterion branding, and and there's others rumors that they acquired the rights. I think there've been some tweets from people. Saying, they're probably coming to Criterion. Who knows what credibility there is. He was in the Criterion office, and actually even just within the last few days, they posted something on social media from Chungking Express.
Yeah, it was Chungking Express.
And actually, I believe Chungking Express is on the Filmstruck channel. I could, or at least it was.
It is.
Yeah, so also with Criterion branding. So that's... That means it's a very good chance. So all those out of print Blu-rays might be worthless. You're welcome.
They did a Criterion did a, I think it was a Throwback Thursday to Chungking Express, and that was had already been a little bit of rumors that there'd be some Wong Kar-wai coming out, and then when that came out around the same time we're discussing it, that's a lot of expectations.
Fuel to the fire, and I like to think that we're the center of the Criterion universe, but we're not. It's actually Criterion, but I think we might influence. And by we, I don't mean just you and I, but just the social media sphere and the fan, like Criterion Forum, Blu-ray, Reddit, all that. I think there's like waves from each one. So like if say three of them say Wong Kar-wai might be coming, it becomes kind of accepted, and it might not happen. But I think there's a good chance. The question is, would they do one box set of like the, a collection of films, like maybe was it Days of Being Wild and Happy Together, maybe some of those Ashes of Time.
I saw an awful picture quality version of Ashes of Time from my library. I would love to see that in the, its full glory. And then what is it? Fallen Angels?
Fallen Angels. And then there's later ones like 2046. There's The Grandmaster, which is probably not a good fit for Criterion. Actually, one I didn't like too much. But I think if they're going to do Chungking Express, well, I don't know. This happened with Playtime. That was out of print for a different reason, for Studio Canal. And then they put out the box set, but they never put Playtime out individually. So, I think it stands to reason. It could happen. All right, John, you tell me, is it going to happen?
We will get at least one Wong Kar-wai film this year. I'm not sure. We'll at least get Chungking Express. Hopefully we'll get more than that. That's what I'll say.
From your mouth to God's or Peter Becker's ears.
I wish. I wish.
Well, I think there's a good chance. Maybe in the next calendar year, maybe this week, maybe they're hinting at something. They've been doing a lot of box sets this year, so it's possible. And I think they could use like a really an impactful release, I think, to finish that out this year. So maybe like a David Lynch. And I think you wanted a David Lynch box set as well. And I should mention the top voter getter in our poll was Fire Walk With Me, which we know is going to happen, but we don't know how.
Right. Because we know that that's coming, and there is some expectation. I think you mentioned this in other podcasts, that David Lynch, the artist's life, will either be a part of that or will be a standalone spine or potentially a part of a box set. So.
Yeah. And there are quite a few out there, and we talk about David Lynch a lot, and we're about to talk about him again. But yeah, there's not a lot of Blu-ray out. So, and I think that they have that relationship. It's clear they're obviously working together on a lot of things, a lot of projects. So if he can steer his work their way, I think they will parcel it out. But knowing him, like we're buds from college, but I have a feeling that he probably would rather it be parceled out like one every few months.
Right.
So I could see like Fire Walk With Me coming out Actually, I could see September because of the I believe that's when the Showtime show will end, or maybe a little after that. But maybe Art Life a couple months later, maybe Inland Empire next year, Lost Highway a little ways down the road, Wild at Heart, maybe 2019, who knows? So it's all speculation. We don't know shit.
Well, and I think everybody wants Lost Highway to come out at some point, but like you said, we don't know anything. But it would obviously that would be amazing if Criterion came out with Lost Highway. That would be one of those blockbuster announcements. So
yeah,
cross your fingers.
I think anything, even these, but even anything except for these would be really, really big deal. Even like Straight Story, Elephant Man, those would be big deals. People love David Lynch. So, okay, let me go through some of the other results. More movies should go Criterion, thank you, which I'll admit I added that. And I wasn't sure if people would pick up on it. But, yeah, that got the third vote. So, yeah, more movie is that's what people are predicting. I think that's pretty likely. Tree of Life was predicted. That's been hinted at. I think that has a good chance. And I added Othello. That's because I know it's coming in September, so I was surprised. You know, that's like the one definite, but nobody, that was actually fifth on the list. Le Samurai, with somebody putting a little subtitle saying, Never Give Up Hope. That's the Melville, Alain Delon. It's not, I wouldn't say samurai, I guess gangster slash samurai classic. Then David Lynch, The Art Life, The Lure, Desert Hearts. So I'll stop there. Any of those? You probably voted for a couple of these.
Well, I don't know. I can't remember why we know it, but I think everybody's pretty certain that The Lure is coming out. Desert Heart. Is it Desert Hearts or Desert Heart?
Yeah.
So, and then Desert Heart, I think we're all on board. I think there are like three or four different ways that we know that that's coming, including obviously the latest Criterion drawing. So The Lure and Desert Heart clearly are coming out soon. Whether they come out this month or come out in the upcoming months remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let me get to the second half of the list because there's some interesting suggestions here. So the next one was Grand Budapest Hotel, which surprisingly did not have many votes. I'm having experienced this for the last few years. This is about the time that people start getting anxious for their Wes Anderson. And I think this is about the time we might start seeing an announcement. Who knows? Maybe by the end of the year. Although that could be Spine 900. 900 or 1,000? I forget.
900. I think people are expecting 900, yeah.
Yeah, that's possible. The next one was Cachet, which is Kiarostami. And I think somebody called me out. I might be saying his name wrong, and if so, I apologize. But Cachet, another one was Human Condition, another Chaplin, please. It has been a while for a Chaplin. I think they're probably spacing those out because there's only so many to draw from. Hedwig, which we will get to in a moment. 16 Candles, 4 Months, 3 Weeks, Certain Women, Spring Breakers, Personal Shopper, Colored Pomegranates, and Until the End of the World. So any of those on your list or on your radar?
So one of the comments that I made to this poll was Certain Women, Kelly Reichardt. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it's Kelly Reichardt.
Yep.
So Kelly, she I have specifically been looking to watch some of her films. I haven't actually seen any. I know Wendy and Lucy popped up on somebody's list. It might have been the New York Times top 25 list. But this movie in particular I wanted to catch, and it is not available on any Blu-ray, and it just came out last year. So that's,
I know, yeah.
As everybody's scratching their head, or has me scratching my head. So somebody coming up with the idea that perhaps the reason is because it's going to be a Criterion announcement would be very exciting.
That would be cool, yeah. There was some, I forget what it was, maybe some festival that where she said it was happening. And I don't want to start a rumor, but there was some rumor maybe within the last 6 months to a year. There's so many of these, I can't remember all of them, but I think that there was a pretty good sign of it. So that would be cool. A lot of these are probably likely. Some of them, Pomegranates, Until the End of the World, maybe on the back burner. I think End of the World is going to come out. All those vendors and movies are going to come out eventually. But either way, we'll find out on Thursday, and we'll be doing a podcast about whatever is announced next week with somebody else that you know.
I attend film festivals. As I mentioned, I'm going to one coming up, and I do ask, and I see directors speak about movies, and I do ask questions. Mm-hmm. I think from now on, my default question is going to be, talk to me about Criterion Collection. When are your movies going to Criterion? Just so I can be a part of the rumor mill.
Well, hold that thought, because we have a couple of those. But yeah, what's interesting is a lot of the speculation, and yeah, I live for this stuff. I know some people don't really care that much, but I enjoy it. And that is how we find out about some of these films coming out. And I actually, even though it's probably, I think Criterion likes to control the announcement. I think it does build up some buzz. There is definitely a community around this label, and I think they have to appreciate that. Otherwise, they would probably tell people, "Hey, shut up."
Absolutely, they have to give all of us physical media addicts. They have to give us a little taste.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a fun poll, and I think next week we'll do another one, asking which one people are most excited about when they do get announced. Just because I like to see, I think that worked well last time, and yeah, polls. I mentioned somebody got banned. Somebody got banned because in the female filmmaker poll, they added Alfred Hitchcock and Francis Ford Coppola. So I just said, none of those shenanigans, you're gone.
Interesting.
It was somebody that might have otherwise suggested Pink Floyd The Wall. That's all I'm going to say. That's a kind of an inside joke.
And not tongue-in-cheek. They would have been serious.
So, okay, right. let's transition. So we always talk about new releases. This previous week, we had Ugetsu, which I was very excited to get. Very, very beautiful packaging. Looks great on the shelf. And this week is They Live by Night. Not sure when we'll cover these on the show. May was so big, we kind of have a backlog, but we'll get to them. Any of these you're excited for?
So I bought Ugetsu, and you are absolutely right. Beautiful packaging. One of the cool things about it is, well, first of all, commentary by Tony Raines.
Yes,
who is, as I told you, listening to his commentary made me want to not quit my job. Maybe think about getting a second career at some point, moving to Japan, learning the language just so I could be a Misoguchi scholar like he is. It's just a really insightful commentary, the kind that everybody wants with every Criterion release. Also, the booklet has the Japanese short stories that Ugetsu is partially based off of. So
nice, yeah.
It isn't a book, so for the people that like to collect the Criterions that have books with them, it isn't that, but it is pretty close. So
yeah.
Definitely great packaging.
You know, maybe you could go to Japan and become Tony Raines' apprentice, you know?
That would be
If this whole insurance thing doesn't work out, that is an option. I mean, obviously you travel. You're about to fly across an ocean. Why not the other one?
Absolutely.
All right, so the one title we've selected to talk about today is Deepan, and I think I'm going to grab a beer for this one.
Great. So are we gonna take a full pause and reconnect?
It's the magic of editing. We're just going to show back up, and I'm going to have a beer in my hand. So this is actually part of the show. Are you going to join me, or are you going
to? I'm looking forward to joining you.
Okay. All right. Let's beer Deepan. Exactly the type of movie to have a beer over.
So you get your beer?
I do. Yeah. What are you drinking?
So I actually quit drinking earlier this year.
Oh,
so I am I'm rocking the water right now.
I'm terrible. Oh man.
No, it's not like that at all.
I don't drink much at all. I'm having Stone IPA, but I do like beer, and we're actually going to Asheville next weekend for and I'm like a one beer a week guy. In fact, I'm probably going to get a little tipsy talking about Deepan,
which is probably the best way to talk about Deepan, let's be honest.
If you listen back to my TV post last week, just because of this one beer, and it was like in process, I was actually a little tipsy for that segment, and then I think I came out of it. That's one thing.
That's awesome.
Talking Criterions will sober you up. So anyway, all right. Well, I'm drinking alone, but that's just fine. So Deepan, let me set this up first. Well, actually, I'll ask you, was this your first time seeing it?
It was. I'd heard of it because of its because it won Cannes, but I had never seen it.
So we sponsor this little series called Foreign Focus at our little indie theater.
And oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. It's been a fun endeavor. In fact, this week we're going to see the After the Storm, the Kurita movie, which I can't wait for. So this was one of their selections. So we got to see it, I think, before other people did. I don't really know if it really played that much in the States. It, for a Palme d'Or winner, it didn't get as much fanfare. You know, it wasn't the Oscar nominee. I think Mustang was from France. And I think even like the French of the César Awards, I think Marguerite and Mustang pretty much cleaned those up. And sorry, Marguerite, not feeling it. but yeah, it's, and I've noticed that the reaction even among cinephiles has been pretty divisive, I guess. And some people it's pretty scathing, but I was, and maybe like you said earlier about lists, seeing it in the theaters, especially the way it's, there are a lot of tight close-ups and, it really does, it really feels like you're in the frame, kind of like Son of Saul, if you've seen that. Yeah, I fell in love with this movie last year. So usually I wouldn't want to revisit a movie I've seen so recently, but I took joy in revisiting this one. So with that said, all right, knowing that I'm in the tank for it, and I'm fine with arguing. In fact, we don't do enough arguing this show, but do you hate it too? Or do you hate it?
So first, to go back to, it's surprising that it hasn't had a bigger social cachet in the U.S. It's also surprising because ODR, having done a Prophet, is mm-hmm. not an unknown entity. He, you know, everybody loves a Prophet. So
yeah.
why this is my first time actually seeing it in the U.S. is a little confusing. But yeah, I do like it a lot. There are aspects that make me question. So for instance, it's a recent movie. So I was making my list for the movies of the last 17 years, and I noticed that you have Deepan on your list, mm-hmm. and I was wondering whether or not I wanted to put it on. I will tell you, up until the ending, I think I would have put it on my list.
All right, so that's actually where, and we try to stay away from spoilers.
No spoilers.
But that's what people take issue with. And I actually, you'd say that there's some genre shifts, and
yes.
So some people take exception to the third act genre shift, and I won't go into it. But, and I don't have a problem with that. Actually, I think that they developed that pretty well, and I think it was handled well. If we were doing an episode, I would probably go in depth into how that tied together with his background and how it was sort of a catharsis. But what I have a problem with is the ending after that ending.
which again, we're avoiding spoilers, so it's complicated to discuss. But
I
yes,
is that the ending you're talking about or the other ending?
So for people who haven't seen the film yet, the genre shifts. It starts off, it's kind of a war movie. Then it's a movie about immigration and potentially a social documentary.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a little bit of a romantic comedy, a domestic comedy.
Yeah.
And this genre shift is explicit. The directors talk about it. People that comment on the movie talk about it. They very much were aware that they wanted to do a film sort of like Cronenberg with mm-hmm. History of Violence, where there are you start watching one film and it turns into a totally different thing. And so that happens several times during this movie. And
yeah.
It is interesting. It is interesting. And I love it right up until a point. And then I'm not going to say I hate it, but I have question marks.
Okay.
And so I'm uncertain about where I put it. I think I need to sleep on it a few more nights before I make that determination.
Okay. Well, on the plane to Sweden, you can ruminate on Deepan. So yeah, I do love it, and yeah, there is a, as far as the big shift, which I'm being very careful. There is a literal dividing line between where that they cross over into that other genre. And I think it was. I think it's actually pretty effective. Now, I will say that I don't know a lot about Sri Lankan culture and the Tamil Tigers. One thing being married to a professor who is into international culture, that sort of thing. I do know more than probably the average person, maybe even the average Criterion fan. But I do like immigrant stories, and I do like kind of fish out of water, especially these days. One thing in the comment or in the supplement with the actor, who I think was great.
Wonderful. And an amateur. Just amazing.
Yeah. I really liked how he was so proud, not just that his film won the Palme d'Or, but that a Sri Lankan film won the Palme d'Or. So I think it was an interesting tale about the immigrant experience. And as far as French film goes, Lan pretty much – that's pretty much the go-to film. You can't top that. Excuse me, that was a little burplet from my IPA. But I do think it's I think there's a lot of depth there. I think there's more than people might see, and I think that I wish we were doing an episode on this because there's a lot to unpack.
So besides the plot, and we've discussed the genre shifts, the other thing that jumps out, and this is unequivocally positive, is the three main roles are all wonderful. And actually, the four main roles, because if you include what's his name? Is it Brahim?
The dealer?
Yeah, the French dealer who's essentially the gangster that they sort of watch his life like he's a separate movie. Mm-hmm. There's almost a movie inside the movie, and they reference it in the movie a few times. But
yeah,
so the four main performances are just all of them are knocked out of the park. The parts that were in the Tamil language, the script writers just wrote it in French and then had to have the people the actor that played Deepan actually write it in the Tamil language because they were completely unfamiliar with the language and they wanted it that way. Mm-hmm. So that part of the experience is, I mean, that makes it worth seeing the film all by itself. It's just the performances and how it is a performance about the other and about the stranger and about different communities and societies we don't necessarily think about or know a lot about. And it's done really authentically because it has that aspect of the people in the movie are actually contributing to the cultural knowledge of the film. And it's, you know, all of that sounds pretentious, but when you actually see it happen, that part of it is unequivocally beautiful.
Not pretentious at all, I think. And I've been on a neorealism kick lately. And in fact, that'll come back up in a moment too. But this is almost an Italian neorealism film, other than it not being Italian. Amateur and professional actors and portraying a level of realism, and sometimes it's hyper realism, and sometimes it's fantasy. And that's where the genre shifts take place. But no, I thought there was a great. I loved the acting, and I love the fact that the lead, who was just phenomenal, he really did carry the. You know, his background on his shoulders, and you really could see it in every moment. So, and I don't know how much was that was Audiard directing him, how much was that just his own personality? He can't change who he is, but
well, don't you feel like those scenes with the songs, the Tamil fight songs, don't you feel like that was him revealing a real part of himself, really making himself vulnerable and, you know, he must have had deeply conflicted feelings. So he was, mm-hmm. the person who plays Deepan was a member of the Tamil Tigers.
Right.
And was an active member, although it sounds like he was more of a political propagandist than he was necessarily a soldier. But nonetheless, this is a movement that was, depending on what side you were on, you consider either a liberation movement or almost like a, you know, a terrorist organization. So clearly, and then eventually they, not even an armistice, I think they were just simply defeated.
Yeah.
And so you can only, even before the Tamil Tigers were defeated, he was unsummarily kicked out of the organization. He was later invited back, but he was kicked out. So you could just imagine, just from the little piece of information there, the amount of emotions he would have around something like that. And it felt like there were parts in the movie where you actually saw the man's emotions and not just the character. And that's kind of intense.
I think so, yeah. So I love the film. And I guess, well, we're already running pretty long, so we have a lot left to cover. So probably should move on. Sounds like I love the film. You like it and respect it, and gonna think about it some. So I'd be curious if a year, 2 years from now, if you would rewatch it, if some of it grabs onto you like it did me. But again, I think just coming out of the theater and I was a little rattled coming out of the theater. And of course, you can't remove yourself from current events too, and some of the culture clashes going on. So that of course factors into my take. It's all subjective, but. But yeah, Deepan, I think either way, whether you like it or not, it's a pretty good Criterion release, and it represents Audiard pretty well. I doubt if he'll get anything else in the collection, but I think he's worthy of being collected.
Absolutely.
So I still have my beer, which is probably a good thing, because we're now on to David Lynch again.
Finally.
and I think we're going to have to breeze through some of these because I don't want to have a 5-hour episode. But so I might. We've talked about David Lynch, I think, the last three or four shows. You probably heard. So I'll just be really quick. I did finally get through season 2, episode 7, and I did take to it more. In fact, the 7th episode where they tie up the Laura Palmer stuff was fantastic. One of the better episodes, I think, of the series. I'm expecting crap going forward, but I'm going to soldier through, and I'm going to watch the rest. So I might give a couple updates. I think I have about 12, 13 episodes left, and then I have the Fire Walk with Me, so it might be a while. But and then eventually I'll get to the Showtime series. So anyway, talk about David Lynch real quick. Do you have any thoughts about Twin Peaks or just him as a filmmaker?
Yeah, I think 20 or 30 years from now, when people think about this period, these last 20 or 30 years, 30 years from now, I think people will, one of the people you have to mention will be David Lynch. And and I think right now he's doing a little bit of legacy burnishing with releasing David Lynch, The Art Life, and all the different retrospectives that are happening with his films. I think Twin Peaks, you want to talk about genre shifting? Twin Peaks is like, that's where it's at. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's interesting because I recently saw Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me in the theater, and I went with a friend, and she had just seen a few episodes of the TV show, and the TV show plays more with the melodrama and the comedy mm-hmm. aspects of what they're doing on that show and what David Lynch does. The film, on the other hand, plays more to the dark side. And she was not expecting it, and she was very unhappy when it happened. So Kate, if you're listening to the podcast, I apologize. I have a certain aesthetic remove when it comes to David Lynch films, where I just think, wow, this is a beautiful David Lynch film. And I forget the emotional impact of the first time I saw these things. Mm-hmm. So that's my apology and my excuse. Well, but yeah, no, I love all of it. I saw Lost Highway in the theater. I live in Boston, so a lot of repertory theaters around here. I saw Lost Highway in the theater again, and just reminded me what a phenomenal filmmaker David Lynch is.
Yeah, he is, and I can't wait until we get some more on Criterion. And by the way, Mark shared with me there's an Entertainment Weekly podcast, and I can't vouch for this, but he does. And so I guess what they're doing is with this resurgence, they went and rehashed season 1, season 2, Fire Walk with Me, and they're going through the episodes at a time. And so it might be terrible, but I'm gonna put a link in the notes, and I think go back and listen to some of the older episodes too, just to hopefully they won't spoil season 3. But
did you tell Jackie about that last episode
about the podcast?
Yeah,
you know, I didn't know about it then, but I think she's probably aware. I think I saw on Facebook she's aware.
Awesome.
Wait, I did not lie. I'm already tipsy, and I'm about 3/4 through my beer. So, okay.
That's why I'm sticking to my water.
There you go. All right, so let's get to some news items.
Great.
Excuse me. So we have the Barnes & Noble sale. Now, this is – I would consider the source. Some employee told somebody that posted on Reddit that there's going to be the Barnes & Noble sale starting July 11th, which is pretty much a month from now. And I'm actually surprised we're finding out this late about the dates, because usually it leaks a couple months in advance. But yeah, so I think we can expect to see it. Last year they did a 40% sale I think they did Arrow and maybe some other titles. So I've also seen a rumor that a 40% sale is going to start on June 13th. And what I've been told or seen online is it's going to have Warner Archive and maybe Arrow. So keep an eye out for that. I would still hold out for Criterion. So anyway, John, are you going to buy a ton of discs on Criterion?
So anybody that's in the Facebook groups knows that I bought a lot during the last sales. And so I'm in the process of selling my house, and I'm flying to Sweden soon. So so the answer is yes, I'm going to buy a ton of Criterion Blu-rays. No, and so I'm trying to stay current with this year, but I am also trying to maximize, you know, stretch my dollar as far as I can. So I probably will buy a lot of 2017 releases during the sale.
It is not cheap John. So I'm sorry for us, our terrible influence on you, but but we've all been down this road before, and my shelf space is already killing me for it. So yeah, I think
I'll be looking for a new place with a lot of built-in shelving.
There you go. All right, cool. Well, I want to see pictures of that. All right. Well, Barnes & Noble, I'm sure we'll talk about that plenty as we get closer. So there was some other news, quite a few little news pieces. I'm just going to breeze through these. One thing was an Adam McGoyan Phantom page. Now, of course, these lately have been meaning less and less because I think they're tied to Filmstruck. So it's possible Adam is just going to get a Filmstruck page. But I've seen rumors of his stuff before, so it could happen. Of course, he's the director of Sweet Hereafter and Exotica, and we own the Artificial Eye Blu-ray, which have not opened yet. do you know Adam McGoyan?
I know the name, because who could forget the name, but a total blind spot in terms of my watching. I have several of those, and this is one of them.
That is a great name. I'm sorry if you're.
he sounds like a superhero character.
He really does, and you know, we don't have kids, but I think if I had thought about it, Adam would be a good name, and not Adam, not Adam West, but Atom, as in the the physics,
the component, the molecular structure.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam McGoyan. I don't know what McGoyan is. I think he has. Is it Iranian?
I would assume it would be Turkish, but
it might be. So my memory's not good. So anyway, Adam McGoyan possibly expects something, and then another. I think this was a film festival thing. Yeah. We kind of knew about this, but the Cuban Memories of Underdevelopment has pretty much been confirmed to be coming because it played a film festival with a Janus logo.
Okay.
And I forget the specifics, and I'm about four-fifths through this beer, so I'm such a lightweight. It's terrible.
It's funny. There was somebody that asked me recently, well, how do you know which rumors you can trust and which rumors you just sort of push aside? And so one of them obviously is if something pops up with a Janus or Criterion logo somewhere, and you think it might get a physical release, that certainly is a pretty hardcore hint.
Yep. And usually it happens. If it tours on Janus, it's going to happen. I think that's right. Almost guaranteed. Now, if it's like on a social media or if it's on Filmstruck, that doesn't really mean anything, or it just means possibly. But yeah, this is probably coming. I haven't been able to see Cuban film except for, the few examples that I Am Cuba, Buena Vista Social Club, probably a few others I'm forgetting. But I'm really fascinated by the genre, or not the genre, but the geography. So I've heard great things about this. So I hope it happens, and I hope soon.
More movies go Criterion. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, do you know anything about Memories?
No, this is. I haven't seen it, and I haven't read a whole lot about it.
All right, I am pretty much drunk podcasting right now. This is sad.
I think the majority of podcasts are done that way. So I think you're in good company.
Yeah, but I'm pathetic. Yeah, I still have about probably about 3 inches of beer left. Well, there was another thing that was posted on the Blu-ray.com forum, and this is actually very interesting. So there were a lot of titles that were listed as discontinued on the Warner Brothers press site, out of print. And so the two big titles here are Mean Streets and Barry Lyndon.
Wow.
Yeah, Scorsese and Kubrick. I can barely talk. This is terrible. But there are some other great titles, too. And I'll put the link on the show notes. It's just one post from this guy named Akajama. So there is... I'll just hit the high points. Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, Peckinpah's Western classic, which would be amazing.
Right. I've heard some people that are big fans of Peckinpah basically say that's that's sort of the holy grail.
It is. I haven't seen it because I'm waiting for the right cut.
Right.
And then Lone Star by John Sayles. I'm a big fan of that. I think it's an indie classic or a 90s indie classic. You know, when we talk about the 90s, we talk about, well, really Tarantino and maybe the Coens, But John Sayles, I think, is pretty underrated as a film director, and Lone Star, I think, is one of his best. And then we have Hedwig and the Angry Inch. A lot of people are very excited about Hedwig. Are you one of them?
So is this the movie that had, what was it? Was it Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes? Am I, is that, what movie is this? I'm actually, I know okay. I know the musical. I've seen, we actually have the musical here in Boston, and I know the gist of it, but I don't, I'm not familiar with the actual film.
Okay, well, it's a, I haven't seen the film, but I know it by reputation. In fact, my wife is a huge fan, and we've almost seen the play a couple times, but it's adapted from the play, and it has John Cameron Mitchell. And so it's basically, I believe it's a transgender, and now, again, I don't, again, don't hate me if I get this wrong, because I haven't seen it, but I believe it's a transgender rock band front man. And so I think Hedwig is his name, and I think the Angry Inch refers to his penis, but that could be the beer.
No, I thought, in fact, I thought it was a hermaphrodite, someone born that, but yeah, no, transgender, and then the musical is supposed to be really, really good, and yes. But I don't remember anything about the film, and so I'm not aware of it. Musicals are, with the exception of probably Singing in the Rain and The Lure, my musical knowledge is pretty threadbare. So,
yeah, well, it kind of has a cult following, and of course in the LGBT community, I think maybe more so. But I remember when it came out, and I didn't see it, and it wasn't for any reason other than accessibility.
Yeah, you know,
that was back in the day before we had all these Blu-rays and video on demand, And so, yeah, I just haven't gotten around to see it. I really want to, actually. And, you know, I might have actually seen the musical. Boy, it's sad that I can't remember that. Anyway, a lot of people would be very excited about Hedwig. And there's also some screwball comedies, Bringing Up Baby and Arsenic and Old Lace. So I would be very excited about the former and not so much about the latter, which I kind of hate, and that's probably a minority opinion. But I think both would be fine for Criterion. So are you fans of Screwball?
I am a fan of Screwball, but I'm just getting into it now. I saw one of the good ones. I saw Palm Beach Story in the theater,
yeah.
And that scene where Hackensack and the wife start going back and forth on the yacht is one of the funniest scenes that I've seen in film. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, Sturges is the best.
Yeah, and I don't know if you consider it to be or not to be a screwball comedy, but that's obviously also, and I'm a bit of a Shakespeare fan too, so that's obviously a pretty amazing. And Tony Erdmann, I think most people consider Tony Erdmann to be a screwball comedy, and that was pretty fun. So
yeah, very fun. Boy, I hope that remake is not terrible. It might be. Anyway, moving on.
I think we should probably talk about Barry Lyndon and Mean Streets coming out would be amazing. And I think if Barry Lyndon came out, that might be one of the top five American, you know, recent American films in the collection. That would be huge.
You know, I haven't seen Mean Streets, so I really can't comment. That's like the one Scorsese blind spot. Barry Lyndon I have seen, and it's one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen, and aesthetically it's just amazing, and actually it's very well written, very well produced.
The best epilogue of any film that I've ever seen.
I'd have to watch it again. I actually don't remember, but my one quibble is Ryan O'Neal is probably the worst cast for that film. I'm not a hater. I love him in Paper Moon, and I think I've loved him in other things. But he just did not really have the charisma, I think, for that character, or maybe the chops. He's fine, but I think he's the weakest element of Barry Lyndon. Either way, I'll revisit.
Yeah, I saw that here in Boston as well on the big screen, and I actually saw it with our good friend Mac Esteyer. So
nice.
And my take on it though was that I actually liked him as Barry Lyndon. I thought he had that. Sweet, in like that sweet innocent look that he is capable of doing a whole lot of shenanigans, or you know, he is capable of doing whatever he had to do to survive or to get ahead. Mm-hmm. But also that he, you know, you could also paint him as sort of an innocent at the same time. I I love that film from beginning to end. So
cool. And in fairness to him, he was basically that was like the peak of his career. You know, he'd done Ghost Story and Paper Moon, and I don't know what happened, but his career never really picked back up again afterward. And I think he took some bad projects. So I think his reputation has been, and maybe my impression is influenced by his bad reputation, but I think it's not been too favorable. I don't know a lot that he's done since. I'm just looking through his filmography. I haven't seen a lot of this. So, but Barry Lyndon, actually any Kubrick in the collection, I think would be fantastic. And right. Maybe 2-3 years ago, I would say impossible until Strangelove. Now I think anything's on the table.
Yeah. I would love to see that film in the collection. I'd love to see the extras that would go with it. The prospect of that is very exciting. A release of that, just like a David Lynch film or just like a David Lynch box set or Wong Kar Wai, would be big news.
Yep. Although accepting 2001 Clockwork Orange, that will never happen.
right.
I shouldn't say never, but not in the near future. So the last piece of news is, speaking of film festivals, Whit Stillman was in Ann Arbor at a film festival, and he met with a Criterion fan, which could have been you, John. And he told this fan that he was optimistic that Damsels in Distress and Love and Friendship will someday come to Criterion. Now, these are both Sony pictures, so that's, I'd say, a good chance in itself. I haven't seen Damsels, but I've seen Love and Friendship. So just quick react, Whit Stillman, more in the collection. Are you okay with that, or...?
Own the box set, haven't seen a single film yet. I haven't even seen, what is it, Love and Friendship, the movie that came out recently that everybody liked and thought was pretty funny. I haven't seen it, so no reaction.
So I did like that movie, but we actually had a bad theatrical experience, and like there were problems with the volume, and so it was tough to see. I think that's one I would benefit from subtitles. So I didn't like it as much as everybody else, but I think it was probably better than my impression. So yeah, let's make it happen. I do like his other work. He gets hated on a lot, especially for Metropolitan. I think is seen as preppy.
All right, more Whit Stillman. Well, more Whit Stillman. Go Criterion.
There you go. That's the new thing. All right. Well. Let's transition to short takes. We're probably going to have to go quick through Filmstruck just because we're running along. So did you have a movie you saw for this or just in general? Have you seen a Criterion lately?
I've seen many Criterions lately. It's interesting. So we did write up some notes before this, and this is the one that I left blank, and I had completely forgotten to put anything down here. So I'm gonna actually pass on a short take because I can't think of a specific Criterion that I've seen other than the ones that we're discussing for this episode. So looking forward to hearing yours.
You're the first. Wow.
Totally okay with that because I also have stuff I'm excited to talk about for my my piece of flair. So let's hear your short.
Let's hope this isn't a precedent and everybody skips their short takes. Well, mine is going to be very short because, well, one, I'm a little tipsy right now, my Stone IPA, and also I watched this during the week, and so anyway, my short take is I've Been a Lonely, which is the Fellini classic neorealism, and yeah, I've definitely been on a kick lately. I'm such a fan of neorealism, and this was a great movie. However, I just saw Rocco and His Brothers the week prior, and I talked about that last week, and it's really difficult for this to follow that, just because it's also an ensemble with a group of people. Of course, this is a group of friends. Rocco and His Brothers is a group of family, but and of course, just like Rocco, this focuses more on a couple characters, although some of the peripheral characters are really interesting, like the playwright guy. I really liked his little subplot.
Yeah, I imagined him as the Woody Allen.
Yeah, sort of. And they're not exactly the most morally scrupulous people. In fact, they're kind of cads, assholes. So I really need to give this another shot. So I did like it actually quite a bit. I think it's actually fantastic. But it's one that it's not on Blu-ray. I watched it on Filmstruck. well overdue for Blu-ray. I think it's really the turning point in Fellini's career, and really, you know, back when he was doing like neorealism kind of titles or types of films. So I would highly recommend it, but I would also not. I think you should wait. So sounds like you've seen it.
Yeah, and the obvious point that a lot of people raise about this film, Scorsese cites it as the source of Mean Streets. So,
and I haven't seen Mean Streets, as I mentioned, but I see a lot of Scorsese in this film. I mean, yep. It's really Goodfellas, really everything. No, it's really a fascinating film. But after just one watch on a weekday, I think that there's just so much here you have to unpack. And there's other things that I don't really understand, like the carnival. That's, I think, something very Italian. So I would actually love a new Criterion release of Blu-ray with some features. So please make it happen, people.
And I think the idea is that the main character, or one of the characters from Ivan Deloni, eventually goes on and is also the character in La Dolce Vita. So, this is a movie with a lot of Criterion connections. I enjoyed it. But I'm also really looking forward to seeing Rocco and his brothers.
Man, that was so good. And in fact, it's actually unfair for me to compare or for this to have followed Rocco, because it was such an amazing movie. And I won't go into that much because it's not really accessible. Although I will correct myself. I said that it was coming out from Milestone, and that was a rumor 2 years ago. But it looks like that might have been just theatrical. They had put up a post on Facebook, and it sounded like possibly they were going to do the Blu-ray, but when you reread it now, it sounds a little more cryptic, and it might have meant just theatrical. So it's very possible that Criterion has the rights and are working on something, so we will see. Oh, this is new. Is it? Mental Illness in Movies?
Whoa, oh, what's that on? Is that on Filmstruck or is that on Criterion?
Filmstruck.
That's got to be Filmstruck. No, that was not there the last time I looked.
Okay. Right.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Mental Illness in Movies, that basically sounds like half of the Criterion collection.
I guess we're back on the show now. So we just discovered a new grouping from Criterion Filmstruck, Mental Illness in Movies. Filmmakers have long exploited the stigmas surrounding mental illness, yada, yada. I'm not going to just read the whole thing. So we have Shot Corridor, Sam Fuller. I know you're a Sam Fuller fan.
Big Sam Fuller fan.
A Woman Under the Influence, Cassavetes, great portrayal of mental illness. Clean Shaven, The Ninth Configuration, Camille Claudel, or actually not, it's Camille Claudel, 1915 by Dumont, and David and Lisa. So mental illness in film. That's a, I agree with you that there's, you can basically just cherry pick Criterion, and you got it.
No Ingmar Bergman in there. I would have thought, what is it, Through a Glass Darkly?
Oh boy, you know,
would have been a natural fit for that.
I think when you go to Faro, you need to get on the boat and into the and sit in the boat in the cold like the actresses did, and just endure the horrors that I mean, quote horrors. They were fine, but he actually was tough on them. The other film struck main channel was directed by Henry Jaglom, or Jaglom. He's a British filmmaker. Actually, in the description, they call him a divisive filmmaker. He's actually brand new to me. I've never heard of him. You?
Never heard of him. I don't think I'd heard of any of the movies except maybe Deja Vu, but that, well, that's how ironic. That could just be me having Deja. Or it could just be that somebody else had done a similarly named movie. So, no, very – this is totally new to me, and I didn't get into it because so many of the revenge films look good that I dived into that.
And I did see that one of them has a late probably one of the last films of Orson Welles, which was Somebody to Love or Someone to Love. So that was 1987. I don't know. I didn't look up Welles' filmography, but that seems pretty late. So that's, I think that's interesting in itself. So anyway, let's get to revenge flicks. That's the fun stuff.
Let's get to revenge flicks.
And I teased this in our Facebook group, and of course people got excited about revenge flicks because that's just a great angle, a great plot is revenge. And there's so many, as you said, for mental illness, you could probably carve out like maybe a fifth of the collection, and there's some sort of revenge. I mean, it's just a mechanism for conflict.
But yeah, I would like to see the Venn diagram of mental illness and revenge flicks in the Criterion Collection. Definitely. When I saw that was on the list, I was pretty excited.
Well, speaking of that Venn diagram, we have Lady Snowblood.
Yes.
And a couple, I don't know, The Italian Connection, and then Revenge by Yermek Shinerbiev. All right. Behind the Sun by Walter Salles. I've liked some Walter Salles, but I haven't seen this one. And then, I think this is a big deal. The Crow, Alex Proyas. Do you like The Crow?
I haven't seen it. So to place myself age-wise, I hadn't seen that movie since I was a teenager.
Okay.
That was one of those movies where everybody owned the soundtrack.
Yes. Yeah, you know, you had to own the, I think, and a few others.
Yeah, you had to own the single soundtrack, you had to own Reality Bites, and you had to own the Crow soundtrack, particularly if you were more on the goth edge.
Right. So I'm probably just a few years older than you, maybe not too many, because I was a little older then. I think I was a young adult. And I haven't seen it since. I think I saw it a couple times on like HBO. It's one of those that, or you know, People's Apartments. That's a film that people would just play.
Yep.
So I'd have to revisit. Alex Proyas is actually a filmmaker that had a lot of promise, and it kind of went down the toilet. I don't know what happened to him. And he did another film. I forget what it was that got skewered by the critics. And he basically ranted about the critics on his Facebook page. I think it was one of those period pieces. It was Gods of Egypt.
Wow.
I haven't seen it, so I really can't speak, but from...
You really can't rant about that. If you make that movie, you have to fully make that expecting, you know, knowing what you're getting yourself into.
Oh, by the way, the Revenge film, the title Revenge, is on the WCP 2 box.
Right.
So we also have three films from Chan-Wook Park.
Yes.
Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Lady Vengeance, and Old Boy. And yeah, if there's any filmmaker that revenge is his thing, if we're not talking about Quentin Tarantino, I think Chan-Wook Park is the guy. I haven't seen the Vengeance films for a while, but Old Boy is like the quintessential revenge flick. So are you a Chan-Wook Park fan?
I am. I watched – when this came up, I watched Lady Vengeance. I had actually had the DVD from the library for a while and racked up some late fees. But I finally got to it when it came on Filmstruck just the other night. And I'm a fan. It's weird. This one is particularly dark. And it's weird when you talk about a revenge film and say, that's a really dark film. Obviously, it's going to be. But this one goes to places. And I'm not going to say it because I think it veers into spoiler land. But man, there are certain scenes where I actually was concerned about the actors that they had playing the roles of some of the things that were happening, thinking that it was inappropriate to have anybody actually play that role. So if you have a queasy stomach, don't watch it. But certainly this is, you know, as far as revenge films go, this is about as high quality as they get. And I think there's some people that are fans of his work that say this is the best of the Vengeance trilogy. And so I haven't seen Mr. Vengeance yet. I've seen Old Boy. I certainly think that this is, I personally like it better than Old Boy. So I can recommend it if you can handle that sort of thing.
I watched the two Vengeance tales kind of close together, so I really can't differentiate. But I do remember one sequence, which I won't go into here, that was very, very cringe-inducing.
Yes.
Speaking of Korean films, when I think of revenge, I also think of I Saw the Devil, which is something I saw within the last year or so, which is one of the better revenge and kind of back and forth revenge films. And I should also mention the last in this grouping is Revenge by Spielman. Have you seen that?
I've not.
Oh, that's good. It has one of the most anxious axe-splitting scenes in history, but yeah, great film. And in fact, that was on my list. I think that was on my 100 list. So let's get to the Criterion Channel. And it was actually kind of a light week with Criterion. And I have to confess, I didn't get to watch as much this week because I was catching up on Twin Peaks, and I did kind of motor through and got through the seventh episode.
It's good to have priorities.
It is, and also, you know, time. There's only so much of it. So I might lean on you a little bit. So I did watch Mystery. So we had the Tuesday short plus feature, and that was a Mystery. I actually don't remember it at all. I don't remember it. And then Viridiana, Buñuel's classic, which I actually tried to watch, but that one did not happen, and I haven't seen it. So are you a fan?
So I'm a fan of both. Mystery, the short, I think it's 12 minutes. Well shot, beautifully framed. Definitely, if you have FilmStruck, check it out. And it's got some weird things, but it still feels very human. It still feels like within 12 minutes they managed to touch on all the major themes.
I remember it now.
Yeah, it touches on mortality, religion, mm-hmm. politics, and really interesting takes, a little bit of surrealism, and they managed to pack it all into 12 minutes. So it's kind of impressive what people can do with the short film format.
Yeah, I think if I remember it now, I watched this like at bedtime on my iPad, so that's not exactly the way to watch a film. But I think there was some class issues as well, and like you said, mortality. And it's actually listed as a sci-fi, but when you watch it, it's really not sci-fi, but you definitely pick up on that element. However, it's kind of coming back to me. It was a good short. Viridiana, are you into Buñuel?
This is my only Buñuel, and I watch it, and I think to myself, I need to watch more because I really enjoy the film. The Last Supper shot with the paupers is pretty much unforgettable and worth watching any movie just for that. The backstory to the movie is fascinating with Franco basically shutting – first they censor it. Then when it begins to become – then when I think it was in the running for the Palme d'Or or won the Palme d'Or – mm-hmm. But when it was at Cannes, then Franco, as it got higher profile, realized, wow, this is really critical of my regime, tried to shut it down, and they stuck it out of the country. And so the backstory is fascinating. The movie itself is, I think, really good, really interesting. And this is a film that makes me want to watch more films by Buñuel. So.
I definitely have some blind spots with Buñuel, but the ones I've seen, which are probably the major ones, are fantastic. And he does not hold back against Franco. And in fact, I think you could say it's maybe a little more veiled, but Exterminating Angel is probably a little bit of critical of Franco, or definitely critical of the upper class that allowed Franco to come to power. So, okay, moving on, we have the Friday double feature, which I think is right up your alley. I Shot Jesse James from Sam Fuller, and then The Shooting from Monty Hellman. So take it away, John.
So Sam Fuller, his first film, it's good. It's now I'm a huge Sam Fuller fan. Not huge, but I've seen about 10 of his films, and I pretty much love all of them. This is probably the one that I think is the least good out of the bunch. But what I think you sort of go into the movie, you show up because it's Sam Fuller's first film that he directed, and you stay for the 1950s, and it has some subtle homoerotic scenes. So, it's pretty cool from that aspect. Other than that, it's more forgettable. I think if you're going to be watching early Sam Fuller, you want to be checking out Baron of Arizona. You know, a lot of people like Steel Helmet, but for me and my friends, we're pretty big fans of Baron of Arizona. But yes, it's certainly, if you're going to be a Sam Fuller completionist, this is on the list. But other than that, I would probably pass.
Yeah, I'm probably a Sam Fuller neophyte. I think I've probably seen about half a dozen of his. You know, I don't know how many films he directed, but I do like most of his work. I have seen this one, and it's been a while. And I remember it is fine. I think the story itself of Jesse James is pretty engaging. But I do think about the, out of deference to Jameson, who was on the show probably a couple months ago, the assassination Dominic's is just, you know, it's not fair to Sam Fuller to compare a movie that came out half a century later. But I think that's like the best version of Jesse James.
Yeah, it's not the best version of the story, nor is it the best version of Sam Fuller. So you know, this is something you would watch if you wanted to watch all of his films, or if you're going through the Eclipse series, like a few of our friends are doing.
Yeah, well, for now. So, and then we have Monty Hellman and The Shooting. Now, I love The Shooting. I'll go on record. I think it's probably my favorite acid western. And we don't talk endings here, but I think it's one of my favorite endings of maybe any western. So, are you a into Monty Hellman?
I am not. And what's interesting is this is part of my introduction to the Criterion Collection. I think this is maybe my third Criterion that I'd ever seen. And it was so great because all of the supplements, it had, you know, this one has Monty Hellman going to the different locations of the,
oh yeah.
Cause when he was working for Corman, he did two movies basically at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you know, this and what is it? Riding the Whirlwind.
Yeah.
And so, so the supplements are amazing and, really about as good as a Criterion can get. But the actual film, yes, the ending is good, and obviously seeing a young Jack Nicholson is amazing. But in terms of the movie, I could take it or leave it.
Okay.
I know that that's probably pretty harsh and dismissive, but I just think, yeah, no, I'm this and Tulane. What is it, Tulane Blacktop? Or
yeah,
Tulane Blacktop. That at least has Warren Oates in it. So.
Oh, great.
Does this have Warren Oates in it as well?
The Shooting? Yeah, it does.
Oh yeah. So anytime you can see Warren Oates and a young Jack Nicholson, it's worth seeing. But the actual plot and some of the stuff in the movie, I was not as sold on. But
yeah, the double feature of this, the disc double feature also has Jack, but I don't think it has. And that was Ride in the Whirlwind.
Okay.
Whirlwind. Why can't I say that word? Whirlwind. It has Harry Dean Stanton, who I think is kind of a great actor, but known as kind of an asshole. I think that's the lesser of the two. I think it's fine, and I think it actually is better in hindsight. But yeah, The Shooting is my cup of tea, and actually Tulane Blacktop. I like that as well. So, okay, let me just run through some of these. Split Screen Season 5 came up. And I tried. I can't get into Split Screen. I think maybe it's because it's the wrong era for me. You know, I do like the indie 90s and early aughts, but yeah, if it were like something about 50 years ago, I would be all up into it. But Split Screen, I just can't do it. Have you tried?
I haven't, but I can see myself checking out the first episode. What is that, Lars von Trier, and he talks about Dogma 95?
Oh, okay.
So I could see myself getting into that.
That's from Season 5 or just in general?
I think I saw something that's Season 5, Episode 1.
Okay. Well, maybe honestly, I haven't tried. There's so much competition for my screen time that this kind of takes a back seat. But
if anything, I'm going to see Fishing with John?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I want to see that first. I want to see the Dennis Hopper episode pretty bad. So
and also, there's so much great TV on, and I watch a lot of movies, so I'm way behind on like actual TV. Like I need to watch The Leftovers, the last season,
which has a 98 on Metacritic, and the second season was amazing. And I would watch Justin Theroux read out of a phone book. So
yeah, speaking of David Lynch, I think I'm gonna continue to take a sabbatical from this one day, maybe when I have time. A couple of neat things. Well, one thing that was weird is Athena Rachel Sangare's films came back. That's the Greek director who I think is probably known for Chevalier. I think that got some attention in the past year.
Yep.
And that was one of the first groupings that they put up. It was kind of weird to see them come back because that was one that was, I think it was on launch. I think that was that was on Filmstruck, but then it left, and now it's back. So I don't know if they're going to continue to recycle content like this, but I didn't actually finish Chevalier, but it wasn't through a fault of the movie. I just think I had something come up, and it was more of a curiosity, but I thought it was fine. So have you seen Sangari's work?
No, I haven't. Chevalier was out in the theaters around here while I've been. You know, you were mentioning earlier your Sam Fuller neophyte. I'm really a neophyte for all of this. So, but even during that came out recently, and I saw the previews for it in the theater, and I expect to see it fairly soon. So, no, I haven't. And it's interesting when things get recycled and what things just disappear and aren't coming back. I think a lot of people are curious about how that works. So it is interesting that it came back.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a Blu-ray release of Chevalier. So maybe, who knows, maybe that's going to be slated for Criterion. Maybe we'll hear about it this week. We'll see. There were a couple titles that were kind of quietly added to the channel. And one of these, speaking of neophytes, this is probably an era where I'm the least amount of a neophyte, which is 30s French cinema. And Renoir's Tony was added, T-O-N-I. And that, yep. Speaking of neorealism, that's like basically the first neorealism film. In fact, Visconti, I think, was an AD. He had some part in the film. I can't remember what exactly he did. But I think that influenced him in that direction. And, of course, he was an early pioneer of Italian neorealism. And I think it's a fine film regardless. So if you like Renoir or neorealism, I would recommend it. And then Secrets and Lies, Mike Lee was added. And that's come up actually quite often. I think that's when people think of great Mike Lee, that's pretty much the go-to film. Maybe there's a couple others, Naked, in the conversation. So, but these, that one did have Criterion branding. So that, again, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't say coming on Criterion, but it would sure be awesome. So have you seen either of these?
I have not. I know that for some people, how difficult it is to see Tony makes it a bit of a white whale for some people. So
yeah,
that getting added was obviously excited. And in fact, we have a Renoir retrospective going on here at the Harvard Film Archive, yet another one. Nice. Of the great theaters we have here in Boston. And so they're playing, I think it's every Renoir that they have in their collection. They seem to have a pretty extensive... It might be every one of his films. So I do expect – I actually expect – I have – I already have Tony scheduled in my calendar at work. So I do expect to see that. Yeah. And Mike Lee, it's another area where I'm not – I haven't seen as much. But yeah, Secrets and Lies is definitely something I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah. I just pulled it up and it's the complete genre noir. So that's actually amazing. So yeah. It's a little different from his other work, but I think it's pretty good. And Secrets and Lies is – definitely it's kind of a Guess Who's Coming to Dinner kind of film. I mean, it's not that type of plot, but there's a lot of, there's racial overtones, but with Mike Lee's touch, and he just has that subtlety, kind of like the Lubitsch touch, I guess you could say the Lee touch, but it's really just a very, very moving film. Just great acting, great, writing, almost a perfect film. I think if I made a 190s, it would probably be near the top. So I hope that comes up. So, wow, that beer floored me. that was a bad idea now that I think about it. So let's, so I'm glad we're done. No offense to you, John, because you've been actually awesome.
Oh, none taken. No, this has been so exciting. I'm really glad that you let me invite myself on.
I think I invited you. I can't remember, but I'm thrilled to have you. You're actually a fixture on our social media, and I just love your takes. So thank you for joining us. So Piece of Flair, the fun stuff. What do you have for us, John?
So I'm gonna go with a movie that I saw in the theaters recently. I've seen a lot of really great movies in the theater recently. A Quiet Passion by Terrence Davies. I saw Your Name, which is, I think, the most successful anime film, grossing film in Japan's history.
Wow.
There's just been a lot of great movies I've seen in the theater lately, but I think the one I want to really, the one like I want other people to see if they can stomach it is the movie Raw. So I went to Sundance Film Festival this year, and when you talk to people saying, what is the best movie you've seen? What is the movie everybody's talking about? The movie that everybody was mentioning was this movie Raw, and it's a coming of age horror film, and there's cannibalism involved. I'm not going to say a lot more than that. What I will say is that it is not. When I was in the theater watching it with my friends, I literally was hugging the seat in front of me, squeezing it, because there was so much cringe-inducing horror going on. It was absolutely wonderful. If you're a fan of Cronenberg's body horror stuff, this is as good as it gets. And it's also female director, young female director. I think she's 33 years old. Confident debut. It's really beautiful. And it's about the body horror that is in the film isn't just for shock value. It is actually communicating the emotional impact that some of the things that are the main protagonist is experiencing to deliver that and make it hit home for the audience. And I think it works really well. It is available on iTunes. I have no idea if it will have the same impact when you're watching it on the small screen as it did when I watched it on the big screen, but it's definitely a movie to check out. So my piece of flair is the film Raw.
Okay, well, I think you sold me. I love me some cannibalism. So, all right, mine, and I actually had a lot of options this week, but I'm going to narrow it down to Airport, which is the series of films from the 70s, the disaster classics.
Yes.
And I put classics in quotes because they are kind of shitty, but they are shitty in a great way. So I've watched the first three of the four. Airport from 1970, the debut, and then there was Airport 75 and Airport 77. And the first two especially, actually the first one was not that bad of a film. It was kind of good in a way. And then the second one with Charlton Heston and Karen Black was like okay and engaging, but like so bad it's funny, unintentionally hilarious sometimes. And having seen Airplane, when I saw Helen Reddy do her song, I was just I was on cloud nine. So, and then the third 77 is actually not as good. I kind of thought that was kind of a bummer, in that it was just bad and not really schlocky bad. Although I was talking to Dave and he disagreed. He loved that one. And so finally, I have Concord coming up, so that might be coming up this week. And so, yeah, that's my piece of flair. It's mindless entertainment, but it's actually important in a way, too, for 70s cinema because of all these disaster classics that came from it. So, I bought the box set, which is all four of them. I think it was like $20. So definitely got my money's worth there. But, yeah, the Airport series, definitely not like what I'm going to watch next, which is Gene Dielman.
Which is a disaster movie of a different type.
I guess you could put it that way, yeah. So, all right.
A domestic disaster movie.
Domestic and femininity disaster. So that's the show. And you can find us on at the Facebook group, Criterion Now. Just search for it. You can find us on the Criterion Cast Master Feed. Or, of course, you can find the show on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter at AWES505, and you can find me on Letterboxd under DSNT. So, John, where can people find you, or do you want people to find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in the Criterion Now and those Facebook groups, and we're going to attach my Letterboxd list to the show notes, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
In fact, so if we're going to – that's probably the best thing that I have going right now. So, yeah, that's probably the best way to find me.
I hope I've friended you on Letterboxd. Have I?
I think so.
It gets a little overwhelming. I get a lot of Letterboxd activity.
Yeah, and if you're on Twitter or in the Facebook, if you want to do hashtag I love you, Doug, you can also find me there.
Those words were never spoken. All right, John, thanks so much for joining. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. Thank you, Aaron.